Happy New Year. We are so glad you've chosen to spend time with us on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, and soon-to-be new grandpa, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Ryan Dobson here with Luann Crane. And Luann, we are going to get 2012 off to a good start with our conversation plan for today.
Well, Ryan, I can hear the sound of people making and possibly even breaking those New Year's resolutions even as we speak.
Say it isn't so.
I would imagine many of those involve the whole issue of physical health, maybe even weight loss.
Well, it's always a good idea to take care of yourself. No one's going to deny that. But to our listeners, I ask, are you sure you have the information and tools to help you hit that mark? And that's the topic we have today on Family Talk as we hear my dad have a discussion about maintaining your health with Dr. Paul Reiser. He is in family practice in Southern California. He's written a number of different books about caring for your body, including the one today's discussion will be focused on, and that's called The Complete Guide to Health, Nutrition, and Fitness.
And Dr. Reiser has been a physician since earning his medical degree at UCLA School of Medicine in 1975.
And my dad, a graduate of USC, is letting him here?
That was a big deal for him to do that. Dr. Reiser is married to Terry, and they've even done some writing together as well.
And we will all benefit from Dr. Reiser's knowledge of the human body. So here now is his conversation with my dad, Dr. James Dobson.
Well, you have been on the broadcast before, and I know that it is frustrating to you personally and as a physician that a lot of the stuff that's out there in the larger bookstores is really not research-based. It is really somebody's opinion, and much of it is wrong.
Exactly. And I hate to say this, and you know, I don't want to make anybody mad, but a lot of what people hear, even on their Christian radio stations, especially on weekends, is bad information. And we've talked about that before, and I don't want to make any enemies here, but we really...
You already did.
Oh, okay.
Nobody
likes us.
I've never been so beat up, but I agreed with you.
I'm so sorry. I want everybody to love me. But I listen to those things, and there are statements that are made, and everybody wants that quick answer. Yeah. They want a pill for this, whether it's from their doctor or from the health food store or from the infomercial, $29.95 a month, and it'll zing up your energy, and it'll take care of your arthritis. I hear these ads all the time, and this is a one-day-at-a-time process, and that was a lot of what we were getting at.
Let's start by looking at the top killers in the Western world and probably around the world for the most part, and let's consider them one at a time.
Okay.
Number one's going to be heart disease, right?
Coronary artery disease and what's called vascular disease, cardiovascular disease, where arteries become plugged up and fail to function. And as the scriptures say, the life is in the blood. If the blood doesn't get to your heart or to your brain, it's not going to work. And the whole realm of coronary disease has been the number one cause of mortality in Western countries, the United States, of course, especially, for the last several decades. Once we got past the infectious disease plagues that were the causes of death 100 years ago, this became the issue. And, of course, it ties in a lot to lifestyle, what people eat, how much they weigh, whether they exercise or not. Heredity, too, though, plays a big role. But our culture doesn't help.
Well, I've been there. You know, I had a heart attack in 1990 and a stroke in 1998, and I found out how to do things better.
Right.
And I have been far more careful, and just went through a 5-hour heart exam, and my heart has not deteriorated at all in over 10 years. So it is possible to make a difference, even though I've got genetics against me, because nearly every male member of my family has had this problem. But it's amazing what some very good medical care and some of the newer medicines and lifestyle changes can accomplish.
If everybody who walked through my door weighed what was considered a healthy amount for their height, didn't use tobacco, didn't use alcohol, or did it in a very modest amount, in moderation, as we say, had one marital sex partner for life, exercised a half an hour a day, got 8 hours of sleep every day, had a half hour of quiet time every day, I'd be out of business. Or I'd have a very different business. I would be dealing with acute things or acute illnesses that cannot be avoided.
I have a feeling you'd love it.
It would actually be enjoyable, but at the same time, these types of problems are an opportunity to talk about what people need to do. You know what, though, is the biggest thing that comes up time and time again as we have these conversations, and it's a theme that I heard the very first time I heard you speak 25 years ago, is the thing that keeps people from doing these things is they're out of time. They look at their calendar and they say, I don't have time to do that stuff. I can't sleep 8 hours. I don't have a half hour to exercise every day. When am I going to do that? They're going 100 miles an hour, and it's the same thing. The things that fall by the wayside with the crazy lifestyle, the conversations with the family and with the spouse and with God are all expendable, and so are these healthy behaviors. And so, yeah, people end up at the fast food place and the microwave, and here we are.
And it really interferes with child rearing, too. We're crazy in the Western world. I'm not sure how other Western countries function, but I can tell you here, I don't even know anybody who isn't working too hard. And it affects health. It affects, your parenting style. It affects absolutely everything.
It totally affects health because the things that need to be done to preserve your health take the time that we don't have. Yeah. How about preparing a home-cooked meal of healthful materials? That takes time. Nobody wants to do that. All of the barriers to weight loss, most of them have to do with the fact that we're in a hurry.
So even the incidence of the biggest killer of all, cardiovascular disease, could be lessened if we would follow a few simple rules.
Right.
All right. What's the number two killer?
Cancer is always number two and kind of vies with heart disease for the number one spot. People may hear it overtaking it at some point in the future because we've actually gotten better at controlling some of those risk factors for coronary disease. So now cancer continues to be the problem. And of course, we have the major ones, the lung and the breast and colon and prostate always occupy the first four spots. Always a great concern because of the tendency for cancer to sneak up on us. People are always wondering, how in the world can I guard against this? And a lot of debate about what are the best tests even to screen for cancer. This is not a cut and dried kind of a topic. It's a very complicated subject. In the book, we try to summarize the best current guidelines, although they do constantly change. For breast, for example, now the recommendation is that a woman 40 and beyond get a mammogram every year. If she has a high risk because of a family history of her mother or sisters having breast cancer, she will need to go earlier. Or if she finds something that is unusual, she finds a lump on her own, that should be checked out. There are some colon screening guidelines that are reasonable and simple. Checking, having your doctor give you the dreaded card to take home to check your bowel movements for occult blood once you turn 35 or 40 is a very wise idea. Getting a colonoscopy, if you can get one, starting at age 50. Prostate screening, how about that PSA blood test? That's a test that many of us recommend, and yet if you look at the data, it's really hard to prove that that has actually saved lives. It's diagnosed a lot of cancer early, but then the question is, well, is that really cancer that's going to kill someone or not? We have a lot of complicated issues with that, and for the subject of cancer screening, it's very important to have a good, solid, long-term relationship with a primary care doctor who can walk you through some of these things.
All right, let's talk about one example. We'll say colon cancer. It can be devastating and horrible and frequently in the beginning does not have symptoms that send you to the doctor.
That's right.
All right. Let's suppose the man that you're talking to is 40. How often do you think he ought to have a PSA? How often do you recommend that he have a colonoscopy or a sigmoidoscopy, which is a little less complete? What do you tell him?
What I tell them is that at 40, there is no recommendation from anyone to get a PSA, believe it or not, unless you have a family history. Now, in reality, most of the guys I see who are 40 and over want to know what that number is, and we'll often get it because I find it's helpful to track it and to trend it. So I do it.
So you get a baseline on it.
I get a baseline and we'll follow it. And that can be very, very helpful in the future. For colon, I am very generous with the old stool card. I will give almost everybody who comes in for a regular visit at 40 or beyond one of those cards to take home. It's low tech. It's inexpensive. They can collect little wads of stool on three different days. If there's blood in there, they need to be screened further. I will usually recommend colonoscopy at that point. If they're 50 or more, I love to get them a colonoscopy, but most insurance won't pay for it. So they'll need to have a reason to go, and I'm always looking for the reason. Do they have anemia? Is their blood count low? That's always a reason to look. Do they have a parent or sibling with colon cancer? Do they have any abdominal complaint? Have they seen any blood in their stool? Some people will see a little blood when they wipe. I don't want to get too graphic here. And that's the only clue they'll ever get. And even though they think it's something else, it's a hemorrhoid or whatever, I tell them, go get a scope.
Mm-hmm. Don't take a chance.
Don't take a chance on that. And I've had too many people in my practice and in my circle of friends and in my own family with colon cancer to pass that up. I'm a big fan of scoping.
Let's talk about the relationship between spiritual health and physical health. Are those really linked? I mean, we all know that Christians die too. They have cancer too. They have heart disease too. I found that out. What is the linkage between having your relationship with God deeply rooted in faith and commitment and health?
It's a very important question. It's one that a lot of the medical organizations and journals are addressing, but in all kinds of ways, some that I think are more fruitful than others. There's quite a body of literature that our good friend, the late David Larson, and his colleagues put together in a tremendous volume, a handbook containing hundreds of studies showing the linkage between a robust, meaningful faith and various health outcomes. The caution you always have to put on that is that you can get into a expectation level that, well, if I do this, then God will do that, or if I just live a good life, I'll never get sick, which is simply not the case. And yet, if you think about it, when somebody has a commitment to God and is living in a certain way and behaving in a certain way, there are a number of things that are likely to come together. They're probably not going to be involved in riotous living, we would hope. They're hopefully going to curtail certain habits of use of drugs or alcohol or tobacco that are harmful to health. Hopefully they'll rein in some of their sexual activities that are harmful to health. Hopefully they will begin to internalize what God has to say about them in a way that affects their emotional life. But one of the things that struck me as we were writing this was the realization that ultimately you can have the healthiest body and the best relationships, and to quote Jesus, what does it profit a person to have all those things and lose their soul? And ultimately, what is health if not a vibrant relationship with God? And we spell that out. How do you do that? There are people who I hope will read this book who don't understand that yet and who will by the time they're done. We explain it in some detail.
As a physician in family practice, how often do you see clinical depression? You see people who come in who are just really debilitated by anxiety and by their negative outlook on life.
I see it every day. It is pervasive. And it comes to us in primary care because it presents with symptoms. One of the most common events in any primary care doctor's day is a fateful three-word sentence, by the way, that comes in as you're about to walk out the door.
Now, they didn't what they initially
what they
said they
for.
Wanted to talk to you.
Right. And what you'll get is something like, doctor, by the way, why am I so tired all the time? Classic question. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you're 45 minutes behind schedule and the waiting room is packed, that is not the time you want to have that conversation. There are so many things that enter that symptom of chronic fatigue that it takes a good amount of time to go through them and sort through the medical and the various issues. But the most common reason for that I see, the most common single reason I see for that is an undiagnosed depression. And I'll start to ask those questions. Do you notice that you're having trouble sleeping? Oh, yeah, I have trouble falling asleep and staying asleep. Do you notice you're having trouble concentrating? Yes, I'm having trouble making up my mind what to do. Are you crying more easily, at which point the tears start to flow?
No.
And I will see this as manifesting in a variety of physical complaints. And it's so important to get after that from all of the perspectives, the medical, the cognitive, the counseling, and the spiritual. We spend a lot of time in my office talking about that issue.
Do you see clinical depression in the teenagers that come in?
Absolutely. And it's the hardest age group to work with for that problem because so many other things are going on. They're working through these other issues of adolescence and their hormonal changes and all the social stuff going on in school, and they're having conflicts with their parents, and their depression may look like acting out or drama or some other issue or not doing well at school, and they're getting the ADD workup and they're getting this and they're in the counseling office. And treating an adolescent for depression is a very tricky business because if you miss it and you don't treat it, an adolescent is at risk for doing something drastic and hurting themselves for suicide. Yeah. At the same time, many times medical treatment for adolescent with depression can be extremely successful, but sometimes they don't react very well to the medications and they'll feel worse. So there's been a lot of warnings about how that should be done. But a tough, tough area, one that needs a lot of work, counsel, and prayer.
Let's move on to some of the other subjects that are there. We talked about the importance of maintaining a healthy weight, but we did not talk about diets. You have quite a bit to say in this book.
Yes.
about the various diets. Tick them off. Everybody's talking about them today. Everybody wants to lose weight. And how do we get a handle on that?
If you go to your friendly bookstore and go to the diet, there's always a shelf full of these books. There is this diet and that diet, and they break down into various categories. And then you have the boring stuff, the more straightforward issues of what is causing me to eat more than I really need and getting at that, which is what nobody wants to hear about. What I think is the biggest single impediment to weight loss is looking for that quick fix, looking for the simple solution, either whether it's a supplement or something you're supposed to take that takes the weight off at night, which never works, or eliminating an entire food group from your diet and saying, no, that'll take care of me. The more extreme the diet plan is, the less likely it is to work. In fact, there was an interesting study that just was published where a number of patients were divided into four categories. One was put on a zone type of diet. A second was put on a very low-fat type of diet. One was put on Weight Watchers. And one was, I believe, an Atkins type. Maybe not correct on that, but they were representative of the current types of programs that are out there. Watch them carefully for a year. It turned out at the end of the year, the single most important factor in who lost the most weight was how long they stayed with whatever they were doing. They all lost about the same amount of weight. But the ones that quit at 6 months lost a lot less than the ones that stayed with it for a year, whatever it was. And so I tell people, if you're going to go to some extreme, can you live with that? Can you eat no carbohydrates for the rest of your life? I don't think so. That's why these things fail. Can you eat no fat for the rest of your life? I don't think so. They're broader themes that are simpler. We make it too hard and we make it too simple.
And when you come off those diets, what happens?
The weight goes right back. Yeah. So all of the most successful long-term plans, I'm a big fan of Weight Watchers. They've been around for a long time. They emphasize straightforward kinds of dietary approaches. They're in it for the long haul. I tell people, treat that like it's a class at a local college. Go down there, pay your money, do your homework, show up at the class. I call it weight church. You're going to go down there and you're going to learn things you've probably heard before, but you're going to remind yourself why you need to do it. You're going to be accountable to somebody. We need those types of elements for chronic things. Nobody goes to church one time and then says, that's all I need for the next year. We have to go to church every day because we need to hear over and over again the same things that we know and be inspired to do them and hear stories about people and how they overcame certain things. And often we need a structured environment like a Weight Watchers or something like that. A lot of churches are doing things like this now, which is fine. A church ought to be a good place to do this.
It has the social reinforcement too, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is hard to do by yourself. Or if you're trying to lose weight and everybody else at home is eating all the junk food, I have patients, there are women who are trying to prepare dinner for themselves, some concoction that's very difficult, and the whole family's eating something else, and she's supposed to cook their food. Well, that's impossible. You can't do that. Everybody's got to be on the same program. The fact is that the solutions that we want are quick and easy, just like we want instant spirituality. Yeah. We want to just suddenly be made over, and we don't want to do spiritual disciplines that God will use to build us. There are very basic, simple things that people can do to lose weight that don't require any supplements, such as eating less food. I said, now look, think about this. You never have to be hungry to lose weight. You eat when you're hungry. But here's the trick. When you're not hungry, can you stop? Ask yourself before each bite, am I still hungry? The other thing that I see, very simple. It's so simple, it's almost silly that we don't think about it, is the speed of eating. Most very heavy people, when you ask them, are you a speed eater, will say yes. They eat as fast as they can. Something got them started doing that years and years ago. And I've watched them do it. And I'll say, how about, what would happen if you ate at the rate of the slowest eater at your table? You know, does your wife eat as fast as you? No. Okay, well, you can only take a bite when she does. See what happens. Because the message that you're not hungry anymore arrives at the same time, whether you're eating fast or slow. And what I've learned also from watching people who've had gastric bypass surgery, which does work, is that they eat slow and they don't eat very much and they lose weight and they eat all the food groups. They don't eat just some. Sure, we need to make smart choices in the kinds of food we eat. We need to eat lots of fruits and vegetables from all colors of the rainbow. We don't eat enough of those. The cuts of meat we eat are all too big. They shouldn't be any bigger than the palm of our hand. When we have grains, they should be whole grains. The whole grains are better for us than the refined grains. We don't really need the super sweet, sugary, soft drink foods. They're a waste of calories. Those are very simple things, though.
Yeah, but you're taking the fun out of life.
I know.
You know?
It's the fun regulators. But not really. There's a lot of great stuff. I think the fun regulating happens when somebody says to you, you can never eat any bread again in your life. Okay. No carbs for you. And that's the answer. Well,
That's claustrophobic.
It really is. And most people will not stay with that type of thing for very long. Why not eat better quality, eat less, eat slow, enjoy the ride?
Yeah. We're almost out of time, Paul. Let's come back to the spiritual issue again.
Sure.
And I look for ways in many of our programs to just go right to the heart of it. Why are we here? What are we trying to do? And the essence of it is bringing people to Jesus Christ.
Right.
You know, we want them to live healthy lives. We want them to have good marriages. We want them to be good parents. But all of that comes down to one basic thing, which is we're here to please God, to serve Him, to worship Him, and to tell as many people about Him as we can. And so in a discussion of this nature, I'm keenly aware that there are people listening to us who don't know Him.
Right.
There are people out there that do not know Jesus Christ, have never met Him, and He has never made sense to them. Where do they go from here? How do they find this Lord?
You know, we have the privilege of having good, intelligent, modern, accurate translations of the scriptures available, the New International Version and many others that allow him to tell his story. You go into the Gospels and just read what he said, and without all the baggage, and understand that he knew why he was here. He came, as he said, to seek and save those that were lost.
The book of John is a real good
place to
start.
It's a great place to
start. It is easily understood, and we can see the whole plan of salvation there.
We can come to him and just say, Lord, you have died on my behalf, and I thank you, and I want you in charge. Yeah. Take over. We talk about the meaning of the word repent. Give up. Yield.
Turn
put him
around.
In the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. Turn around. Let him be in charge.
And there are people all around you who know him and who can guide you. We're social creatures, and we need one another. We really do need each other. And ask somebody that you have confidence in that seems to have the fruit of the Spirit, seems to display that righteousness that comes from within. Ask them to pray for you. Ask them where they go to church. Ask them who their pastor is. You can find him if you look for him, because the interesting thing, the wonderful thing, the miraculous thing is he's looking for you too.
Right.
And that is the perfect way to end our first broadcast of 2012. Ryan, with that reminder of how important our spiritual health is, if our body is healthy but our spirit is sick, we're still not whole.
Well, Luann, speaking to our listeners, if you're not sure exactly what my dad and our guest, Dr. Paul Reiser, were talking about on this Family Talk broadcast, give us a call. We would love to tell you more about what it means to have a relationship with Jesus Christ.
That'd be the perfect way to start the new year.
Oh.
Our number to call, 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825. Or if you prefer, you can learn more about the Christian faith at familytalk.org. Also there, you'll find more information about Dr. Paul Reiser's books.
Thank you for spending this first Monday of the new year with us. Hope your 2012 is off to a great start. And make plans to be with us tomorrow when we'll tackle a big topic: the threat of radical Islam to the Western world.
You don't want to miss it. That's next time on Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson.